We're going to start this week's three stories you should know by talking about the Super Bowl, but not the actual game.
Welcome to America.
You're not wanted here. Go back home.
It's the ads we're going to talk about. My guests this time around are Mina Kimes of ESPN The Magazine and Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to start this week. A woman and her daughter get up early and begin a difficult journey, and they speak Spanish. People of different races and colors blend into each other while music celebrating diversity plays in the background. And a German guy endures hardships coming to the U.S. where one resident tells him he's not welcome. Go back home. We're given to understand the German guy is going to become a successful businessman. Never mind what products or services are being celebrated in these Super Bowl ads. Could you watch them without thinking that the corporations and the ad agencies that made them weren't responding to policies hostile to immigrants? Because I couldn't, and I'm encouraged. Or am I imagining this corporate dismay at divisiveness?
I don't think you're imagining anything. You know, I was at the Super Bowl, so I missed the commercials, but I watched them afterwards, and I was pretty stunned. It does feel like in sports, we've sort of crossed some kind of Rubicon when it comes to politics. You know, you've got athletes like Russell Wilson and Steph Curry, who are very similar to brands in that they try to be as inoffensive as possible or historically have tried to do that. But now they're taking stances with regards to politics. And I think that suggests not so much that there's a fundamental shift in brands or athletes, but maybe in the norms that are being created by the new administration of what is possible.
I do think that this is definitely a conscious decision on the part of brands and advertisers, and whether it's directly about the election or directly about what was kicked up before the election, I think it's certainly tapping into something like that. At the same time, I still remember, I'm old enough to remember in 1984, the Apple ad with Big Brother, and that didn't necessarily represent any ending of an Orwellian universe, at least if I remember the mid to late 80s correctly.
It is important, I think, to reiterate something that you started to say, Mina, about current athletes and their positions in this. We're now up to six New England Patriots who have announced that they will not participate in the team's White House visit, never mind that the owner, the coach, and the quarterback are friends of the president. I got to wonder if this is going to have an impact beyond football, beyond basketball, beyond the particular teams and athletes involved.
It's so interesting because it's football, too, which has kind of been a space where this doesn't happen. You know, when we see basketball players and coaches speaking up, it feels normal and accepted at this point. But the NFL has long been so relatively benign. So to see these kinds of stances being taken by NFL players and during the biggest game, I think is telling of something bigger than the sport itself.
I've been watching this from baseball's point of view, and they dodged a bullet, actually, because the Chicago Cubs visited the White House just before Obama left.
Yeah.
It's something I think they're very happy to see basketball and football grapple with for a little while longer.
Is that a phenomenon that you anticipate, though?
I do, actually. I think when spring training starts next week, you're going to start to see a lot of articles about the divide in clubhouses, because the most outspoken baseball players tend to be very conservative, rural people, vote overwhelmingly Republican, support Trump. There is a largely silent but increasingly noisy minority of players, primarily in the Latino Hispanic community, that are very, very upset about this, aren't big fans of Trump, and I think you're going to see a lot more vocal players about that.
Okay, Craig, before it's your turn to bring up a topic, I just want to warn our listeners who consider themselves baseball purists that this next story may be upsetting to them, but go ahead.
Yeah, I hope you're sitting down, but this week, Major League Baseball, which is 50 years into the designated hitter experience and still having a lot of controversy about it, announced that they're going to be using the minor leagues as an experiment, as a laboratory for speeding up the games. And one of the things that they propose, and it's going to be happening in rookie ball, is extra inning games will start with a runner on second base. The idea here is to increase the likelihood of scoring early in extra innings, cutting down the possibility of a 14, 15, 16 inning game. kind of radical. It's been used in the World Baseball Classic a little bit differently. And it's just part of a lot of experiments that MLB has been undertaking lately to try to shorten games. We're talking pitch clocks. They're thinking about getting rid of the intentional walk, or at least getting rid of the pitches required to issue an intentional walk. Very radical for a very conservative baseball league.
To me, this seems kind of like a solution or in search of a problem, maybe. I don't know. I cannot even think of that many games I watched over the course of the last few seasons that went this far. I think it's probably in the single digits, right, where I can think of a number of games that were lopsided affairs but just kind of dragged on slowly because of incessant pitching changes and batters taking forever between. And those seem to be like real problems that maybe need to be solved.
I have some other ideas for speeding up the game. Every other hitter starts with a count of 3-2. Three foul balls and you're out. And batters who walk are required to try to steal second base on the first pitch to the next batter. You like it?
Ooh. I like that one.
I'm going for one inning only, but you have 27 outs. And what that will do is get rid of the commercial breaks.
Oh, that's another excellent idea. All these things that people have tried to do to speed up baseball, they haven't worked. You know, when you start penalizing that guy who steps out and works on his batting gloves for 20 minutes before he steps back in, that's when you'll see a change. But they don't do it.
They've had the rules on the books, too. They've had the rules on the books forever for this, and they don't enforce it because why should they? They don't want to get into a fight with the players. And the real issue is the style of play in Major League Baseball and as it's developed, which has made games drag more. You have a lot more walks, a lot more strikeouts, pitch counts go longer, and there are more pitching changes. Major League Baseball is not prepared to actually make rules that will change the fundamental play of the game. They're trying to do things around the edges that, frankly, are just annoying people.
Mina, we have saved your story for last because, quite frankly, it is the most important of the three.
It's an outrage, is what it is. So last week, the Westminster Kennel Club announced that cats were going to be allowed in to the dog show. Now I should correct it. It's not actually the dog show, and they clarified they're going to let cats do some kind of display before an event in February called Meet the Breeds, and I think the cats will get to have their own agility competition. I don't know what kind of agility competition cats can have other than laying around and looking agile, but they bow down to pressure from the cat lobby, the cat industrial complex, I think. So now that this is happening, and look, it's hard to make a case against allowing cats in. That doesn't run counter to my fundamental beliefs in inclusiveness, but I am going to try. Full disclosure, I am a dog lover, a cat hater. Because cats and dogs, they're not like men and women or people from different countries. They are different species, and they appeal to different audiences. So as a dog enthusiast, I do not want to tune into the dog show, which I love, and see a bunch of weird-looking, apathetic cats.
Craig, you want to make a case for cats?
Well, as the person who, as speaking to you, is in a room with literally four cats at the moment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I will say I am slightly triggered. However, I will I will rise above these petty provocations. I understand that Mina would like a cat ban, and maybe she won't call it a cat ban when we take her to court over it, but I understand what this is motivated about. I think America's better than that, and look forward to next year's Super Bowl ads dealing with cats primarily and our acceptance of them.
Has anybody polled the cats to see whether they want to be in this show? Because I've never seen any evidence in a cat that the cat wants to do anything for the owner at all.
Cats have self-actualization, right? And they're not desperately trying to please others in that way that dogs do, which, hey, you know, if it makes a dog feel better, that's great. But I think a cat is its own cat.
Well, maybe if a cat is its own cat, it should have its own cat show.
Bingo.
Boy, that's almost racist.
My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Mina Kimes of ESPN, the magazine, and Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.